Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 6, Chapters 18 and 19. Chapter 18. At this time also Ambrose, who held the views of the heresy of Valentinus, was refuted by the truth as presented by Origen, and, as if his mind were illuminated by light, gave his adhesion to the true doctrine as taught by the Church. And many other cultured persons, since Origen's fame was noised abroad everywhere, came to him to make trial the man's sufficiency in the sacred books. And numbers of the heretics, and not a few of the most distinguished philosophers, gave earnest heed to him, and one might almost say were instructed by him in secular philosophy as well as in divine things. For he used to introduce also to the study of philosophy as many as he saw were naturally gifted, imparting geometry and arithmetic and the other preliminary subjects, and then leading them on to the systems which are found among philosophers, giving a detailed account of their treatises, commenting upon and examining into each, so that the man was proclaimed as a great philosopher, even among the Greeks themselves. And many persons also of a more ignorant character he urged to take up the ordinary elementary studies, declaring that they would derive no small advantage from these when they came to examine and study the divine scriptures. For this reason he deemed especially necessary, even for himself, a training in secular and philosophic studies. Chapter 19. Now, as witnesses also to his achievements in this direction, we have the Greek philosophers themselves, who flourished in his day, in whose treatises we find frequent mention of the man. Sometimes they would dedicate their books to him, sometimes submit their own labors to him for judgment, as to a master. But why need one say this, when even Porphyry, who settled in our day in Sicily, issued treatises against us, attempting in them to slander the sacred scriptures, and mention those who had given their interpretations of them? And since he could not by any means bring any base charge against their opinions for lack of argument, he turned to deride and slander their interpreters also, and among these Origen especially. He says that in his early manhood he had known him, and he tries to slander the man, but unknown to himself really commends him, telling the truth in some cases, where he could not speak otherwise, in others telling lies, where he thought he could escape detection, and at one time accusing him as a Christian, at another describing his devotion to the study of philosophy. But here are the very words that he uses. Some, in their eagerness to find an explanation of the wickedness of the Jewish writings, rather than give them up, had recourse to interpretations that are incompatible and do not harmonize with what has been written, offering not so much a defense of what was outlandish as commendations and praise of their own work. For they boast that the things said plainly by Moses are riddles, treating them as divine oracles full of hidden mysteries, and bewitching the mental judgment by their own pretentious obscurity, and so they put forward their interpretations. Then, after other remarks, he says, "But this kind of absurdity must be traced to a man whom I met when I was still quite young, who had a great reputation and still holds it because of the writings he has left behind him. I mean Origen, whose fame has been widespread among the teachers of this kind of learning. For this man was a hearer of Ammonius, who had the greatest proficiency in philosophy in our day, and so far as a grasp of knowledge was concerned, he owed much to his master. But as regards the right choice in life, he took the opposite road to him. For Ammonius was a Christian, brought up in Christian doctrine by his parents, yet, when he began to think and study philosophy, he immediately changed his way of life conformably to the laws. But Origen, a Greek educated in Greek learning, drove headlong toward barbarian recklessness, and making straight for this, he hawked himself and his literary skill about, and while his manner of life was Christian and contrary to the law, in his opinions about material things and the deity, he played the Greek, and introduced Greek ideas into foreign fables, for he was always consorting with Plato, and was conversant with the writings of Numenius and Cronius, Apollophanes and Longinus and Moderatus, Nicomachus, and the distinguished men among the Pythagoreans. And he used also the books of Caraman, the Stole, and Cornatus, from whom he learnt the figurative interpretation as employed in the Greek mysteries, and applied it to the Jewish writings. These statements were made by Porphyry in the third treatise of his writings against Christians, and while he tells the truth about the man's training and erudition, he clearly lies, for what is the opponent of Christians not prepared to do? Where he says that Origen came over from the Greeks, and that Ammonius lapsed from a godly life into paganism. For Origen kept safely the Christian teaching which he had from his parents, as the history above made clear, and Ammonius maintained his inspired philosophy, pure and unshaken, right up to the very end of his life. To this fact, the man's works witness to the present day, and the widespread fame that he owes to the writings he left behind him, as, for example, that entitled On the Harmony of Moses and Jesus, and all the other works that are to be found in the possession of lovers of literature. Let these things be stated to prove at once the false one's calumny and Origen's great knowledge of Greek learning. With regard to such learning, also, he writes as follows in a certain epistle defending himself against those who found fault with him for his zeal in that direction. But, as I was devoted to the word, and the fame of our proficiency was spreading abroad, there approached me sometimes heretics, sometimes those conversant with Greek learning, and especially philosophy, and I thought it right to examine both the opinions of the heretics and also the claim that the philosophers make to speak concerning truth. And in doing this, we followed the example of Pantanus, who before us was of assistance to many, and had acquired no small attainments in these matters, and also Heraclius, who now has a seat in the presbytery of the Alexandrians, whom I found with the teacher of philosophy, and who had remained 5 years with him before I began to attend his lectures. And though he formerly wore ordinary dress, on his teacher's account he put it off and assumed a philosophic garb, which he keeps to this day, all the while studying Greek books as much as possible. This, indeed, is what he wrote in defense of his Greek training. But, at this time, while he was living in Alexandria, one of the military appeared on the scene, and delivered letters to Demetrius, the bishop of the community, and to the then governor of the province of Egypt, from the ruler of Arabia, to the intent that he should send Origen with all speed for an interview with him. He duly arrived in Arabia, but soon accomplished the object of his journey thither, and returned again to Alexandria. But after the lapse of some time, no small warfare broke out again in the city, and leaving Alexandria secretly, he went to Palestine and abode at Caesarea. And although he had not yet received ordination to the presbyterate, the bishops there requested him to discourse and expound the divine scriptures publicly in the church. That this is so clear from what Alexander, the bishop of Jerusalem, and Theoctistus, the bishop of Caesarea, write with reference to Demetrius. They make their defense somewhat as follows, and he added to his letter that such a thing had never been heard of, nor taken place hitherto, that laymen should preach in the presence of bishops, though I do not know how he comes to say what is evidently not true. For instance, where there are found persons suited to help the brethren, they also are invited to preach to the people by the holy bishops, as, for example, in the Laranda Euelpis by Neon, and in Iconium Paulinus by Celsus, and in Senada Theodore by Atticus, our blessed brother bishops. And it is likely that this thing happens in other places also without our knowing it. In this way, honor was paid to the man of whom we are speaking while he was still young, not only by his fellow countrymen, but also by the bishops in a foreign land. But since Demetrius once again recalled him by letter, and by men who were deacons of the church, who urged him to come back with speed to Alexandria, he returned, and continued to labor with his accustomed zeal. Here ends Book 6 and Chapters 18 and 19, and we'll move on to some brief notes and commentary. These chapters focus on Origen and his connections with Greek philosophy and his interactions with Greek philosophers. Chapter 18 begins by describing Origen's influence on a man named Ambrose in moving him away from the heresy of the Valentinians. Many other so-called cultured persons were also drawn to Origen given his competence in secular Greek philosophy. Chapter 19 describes how Origen was criticized by the Neoplatonic philosopher Porphyry of Sicily in his writings against Christians. A citation is given by Porphyry, who accused Origen of making riddles of Moses by finding in him hidden mysteries. Porphyry says that while Origen was a Christian in manner of life, in philosophy he played the Greek and introduced Greek ideas into foreign fables. Eusebius notes that Porphyry's descriptions of Origen are sometimes accurate, but at other times they show confusion. For example, he says Origen came to Christianity from the Greeks, when he was in fact raised in a Christian family. And he falsely says that one of Origen's teachers, Ammonius, eventually lapsed back into paganism. At the close of the chapter, Eusebius notes how Origen was sent by Demetrius, bishop of Alexandria, on a diplomatic mission to Arabia, and how Origen later secretly left Alexandria during a time of warfare for Caesarea in Palestine. While there, though not ordained as an elder, he publicly expounded the scriptures in a church on the invitation of local bishops. This led to controversy when Demetrius objected that laymen should not preach. Eusebius, however, defends Origen's actions, saying that there was precedent for this sort of thing, but he notes also Origen's submission to Demetrius as he reports that he returned to Alexandria to continue his labors there as a teacher. In conclusion, Eusebius is continuing in these chapters his glowing report on the life of Origen. These chapters focus especially on Origen's abilities to interact with Greek philosophy and also to incorporate Greek philosophy into his understanding of Christianity. For this, he was criticized by pagan philosophers like Porphyry. It also gives insight into the conflict that has been mentioned before that was had with Demetrius of Alexandria regarding Origen's ministry in Palestine, but Eusebius again is quick to defend Origen's reputation. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. Hope that you have found this to be helpful and edifying, and I will look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Till then, take care and God bless.